and help eliminate America's agenda in the region. The leader added Israel's brutal and merciless crimes against Palestinians in Gaza have not only tarnished the image of the Zionist regime, but its American and European backers as well. He also questioned the Western culture, saying some of its leaders justify Israel for killing 5,000 Palestinian children with phosphorus bombs. Ayatollah Khamenei also highlighted the crimes committed against the Palestinian nation since the creation of Israel. Iran's leader added the U.S.'s plot to draw a new Middle East map to protect its interests has failed, because he argued Washington wanted to annihilate Lebanon's Hezbollah and its new map, but the resistance movement grew 10 times stronger. The leader also touched on the U.S. failures in Iraq and Syria. He said the U.S. formed and funded terrorist groups, including Daesh, but failed to occupy the Arab country. The leader also underlined that one of the U.S. plots was to back the occupying Israeli regime in a way that nothing is left in the name of Palestine anymore. Ayatollah Khamenei was addressing members of the besieged volunteer force who had gathered from across the country. Wednesday marks the anniversary of the establishment of the besieged volunteer organization in Iran. Firoslan Najim is a human rights activist who joins us from Toronto. Welcome to the program, Firoslan Najim. So Iran's leader has said that the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, amongst other things, has ruined the different plans that the U.S. had for the region. Now, which plans do you think he was referring to that maybe ranks high on the list?
First, I'd like to congratulate the Iranian nation on the anniversary of the besieged forces foundation and establishment, a great force that always supported the security of Iran and fought the sedition and all the instigators of sedition and corruption inside Iran. And related to your question about the plans of the Zionist regime was to expand the allies of the Zionist regime, to have more submissive nations, to build more bases for the U.S. and British forces in the region, and to have more control and expand their control of the region, the West Asian region, as well as suck the resources from all these countries and keep them, in a corrupt state. And the Islamic Republic of Iran, since the foundation of this great revolution by the leadership of Imam Khomeini, was able to really puncture and destroy their plans and to spread the allies of the fight against Zionism and the fight against colonialism and their control and expansion. And obviously that is by the resistance groups that were founded in Palestine, in Gaza, in different areas in Palestine, as well as in south of Lebanon. And it obviously has expanded to all over the region, where we can see now forces in Yemen humiliating the Zionist regime and putting them on their knees, as well as the popular mobilization forces and the resistance in Iraq. The whole alliance, the Axis of Resistance, is the ones that really destroyed the plans of the U.S., the British, and the Israelis at this time. And now you can see that the Israelis are deterring and they're weakening. And the way they speak at times is very arrogant, but then, and fully, they have to retract and change their plans because of the strength of the resistance and also because of the coordination between the resistance at this point in this battle right now. The operations are very coordinated between the different groups from different countries, and that they're weakening the Zionist regime and installing fear in the Zionist regime and its allies. And Imam Khamenei elaborated on very important points, that they tried to destroy Hezbollah and they failed, and now Hezbollah is 10 times stronger. He also elaborated about how they tried to weaken Iraq and control Iraq, and they also lost there as well. Same thing with Syria as well. They tried to control that, and they funded and supported and armed many terrorist groups there and tried to cause much sedition in that country and bloodshed. And fully, they still failed there, and the leadership is still there under Bashar al-Assad. And if you go to, for instance, to Yemen as well, they launched a war about 8 years back against the Yemeni government there, with the Saudi coalition and their allies, funded and supported by the U.S. and they also failed there as well miserably. And you know, today we see that the Western civilization, the Western regimes, the Western leadership has failed miserably and really exposed their face in front of the world, that their support killing children. They call that defending themselves, and that's what Imam Khamenei also pointed at, that in this recent battle with the Al-Aqsa flood, we've seen that they killed so many children, we've seen in front of our eyes on social media. You know, luckily we were able to see some of these gruesome images. Not that we like to see them, but I'm saying at least we can see the evidence now in front of us. And everybody has a phone, and everybody can somehow get in touch with some type of social media platform. And we've seen the gruesome pictures of how they the cruelty of killing children in masses like this. And the Western world is sitting there watching it and supporting the Israeli regime. This truly showed that the Israeli regime is backed by the West, and that they're both collaborating and both accomplices in all these war crimes. And they do not care about human rights, and they do not care about you know, human value and human blood and justice and so on. Because if they did, they would have intervened somehow. They would have made some major pressures, you know, to push Israel back from all these crimes. But they watched them, you know, in these last 50 days, or 40 days, they watched them commit so many war crimes and so many massacres, and they did nothing about it. We've seen them in other instances in different countries where they intervene very fast, and they impose sanctions, and they put major pressures, and they spread awareness all over the countries, and they do whatever they can to back up you know, certain resistance or certain battles. And one recent one that's very popular is obviously with Ukraine and Russia, where you know, the Western world, you know, they were diving and they were jumping so fast to support the Ukrainians to fight the Russians. But then you don't see that at all with the Palestinians. It's the other way around. They're supporting the stronger power.
Okay, thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. Firas Alnejim, human rights activist there from Toronto. Many thanks. Now to the Israeli war in Gaza. Intense negotiations are underway to secure a second extension of a temporary ceasefire between Hamas and the Israeli regime. The current truce is due to expire in a matter of hours. Both sides are reportedly keen on extending the pause, which includes a prisoner swap and the entry of humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. Five rounds of prisoner exchange have seen the release of 180 Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails and 60 captives held by Hamas. The sixth batch of prisoners is set to be freed later today. The Palestinian resistance groups still hold about 160 Israelis captured during the Operation Al-Aqsa flood on October the 7th. The current truce initially went into effect for 4 days on Friday and was later extended for 48 hours. Let's take a listen now to two of the Palestinian prisoners who were released from Israeli jails on Tuesday night.
I have an indescribable feeling. Freedom is the most beautiful feeling in the world. From the moment a prisoner is deprived of their freedom, they await the day when they will regain it. Today, this freedom is partial and incomplete. It will be completed when our homeland is liberated and all our prisoners are set free.
Indescribable joy. I feel like I have escaped from death by coming out of the interrogation cell after spending a month there. The prison was extremely harsh, and thank God that I was released from the prison. We left behind many prisoners, and I hope they will also be released.
We talked to the mother of one of the Palestinian prisoners who was freed on Monday from an Israeli jail. 17-year-old Jawad Kamel was arrested last December. Here's what his mother told us about Kamel's situation in Israeli detention.
I swear to God that in the past 2 months since the war started, it has been very difficult for us as a family. We didn't know anything about my son or about any of the prisoners inside the Israeli jails. We were very worried about our sons because we had heard that Israeli soldiers had been assaulting the prisoners and seizing all their belongings, including their mattresses and blankets. We knew from the released prisoners that they were not getting good or enough food and water. We heard they were not able to take showers the entire time, and they had been deprived of the simplest rights. Alhamdulillah, my son will be released, and inshallah, all our prisoners will be freed. The credit goes to our resistance. May Allah give them a mighty victory, thanks to Allah. And we are praying all the female and male prisoners would be released from all Israeli jails. Jawad was 16 years old when he was arrested last December while visiting the lands occupied in 1948. Regime forces detained him for entering the occupied territories without a permit. His detention was arbitrary. He was mistreated and was beaten while he was in the Negev jail. I really want to thank our resistance, and may Allah have mercy on the righteous martyrs who are most honorable among us, and I wish recovery to all the wounded.
Health facilities in the Gaza Strip bear the brunt of Israel's brutal war. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza has turned the spotlight on the dire situation of hospitals amid Israel's blockade.
Pursuant to the health status in the northern Gaza Strip, only three hospitals are still operating, but they cannot cover the health requirements inside the Gaza Strip, as these hospitals are small and there are 900,000 people left. In addition, the health situation in the northern Gaza Strip is currently desperate because of the inaccessibility of medical aid and fuel to the hospitals in the north.
The Palestinian Health Ministry spokesman also described the situation in northern Gaza as catastrophic amid lack of medicine and fuel. This as Israel prevents delivery of aid and fuel to the northern parts of the Gaza Strip. Al-Qudra said hospital beds are completely full and wounded people are lying on the ground. Further in his remarks, he denounced the arrest of the director of the Al-Shifa hospital by Israeli forces.
The arrest of Dr. Muhammad Abu Salmiya is inhumane and illegal, and the international community must do everything possible to pressure the Israeli occupation to release Dr. Muhammad Abu Salmiya and his colleagues, as the arrest took place under the sight and supervision of the United Nations and the World Health Organization.
Israelis arrested the Shifa Hospital director last week. They accused him of cooperating with the resistance movement Hamas. The regime claims that Hamas used the hospital as its command center. Israel has not provided any evidence for that claim. Hamas and doctors working at the hospital have dismissed the claim. The hospital was recently the scene of the massacre by the Israeli military. Sounds of gunfire were heard overnight as Israeli forces conducted a fresh raid on the city of Jenin and its refugee camp in the north of the occupied West Bank. The regime forces, backed by armored vehicles and bulldozers, stormed the city and deployed snipers on the rooftops of several buildings. They also fired stun grenades and tear gas canisters toward residents, causing several people to suffer suffocation. The troops laid a siege on the city's hospitals, blocking entrances to the facilities and preventing the work of medical teams. At least six Palestinians were injured by live bullets during the incursion. The regime has intensified its raids and arrest campaign across the occupied territories, notably in Jenin. Since the onset of the Gaza war, Israeli forces have killed more than 230 Palestinians and detained hundreds more in the West Bank. Pro-Palestine rallies have been held in different cities around the world in condemnation of Israel's recent massacre in the Gaza Strip. Protesters demand a lasting ceasefire. In the U.S., dozens of New Yorkers gathered outside of the Egyptian consulate in Manhattan. They urged the Arab country to keep the Rafah crossing open for vital aid to be transferred to Gaza for the thousands in need in the long-blockaded territory. People carry placards reading Zionism is terrorism and free all Palestinian prisoners. In Dhaka, the capital city of Bangladesh, hundreds staged a rally chanting anti-Israel slogans while holding banners in different languages, condemning the regime's brutal war on Gaza. The South African city of Johannesburg also saw a huge crowd rallying in support of Palestine. Protesters marched through the streets, chanting slogans and demanding a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. People in the U.S. city of Burlington have held another vigil for three students of Palestinian descent who were shot and wounded near the Brown University campus. The city mayor hailed the people for their emotional support to the victims despite the frigid weather.
Saturday's events, the actions of one person at this incredibly sensitive time, really sent a message of hate, and I think what tonight's vigil was about is to say to the students that Burlingtonians are support them and feel terrible that this happened to them while they're visiting our community, and also to send a message to the larger Arab and Muslim community here that whose in some ways their worst fears were confirmed by what happened, that this is a community that supports and welcomes them and where they are safe.
The mayor underscored that there was no politics involved in the rally. Rather, it was an assemblage of people who care. The day before, university students also organized a vigil and observed the moment of silence for the victims. Hisham Awartani, Tahsin Ali Ahmad, and Kanan Abdulhamid, all in their 20s, were attacked on Saturday. They remain under medical care. The assailant, Jason J. Eden, had pleaded not guilty to charges of second-degree murder, but a court ordered to keep him in custody. Earlier, police classified the shooting as a hate crime. Threats against Muslims have increased across the U.S. since Israel launched its war in Gaza last month. The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, has recently claimed that Iran has certain nuclear capabilities that are a cause for concern. Nasser Kanani, the spokesman of the Iranian Foreign Ministry, has slammed the remark and questioned the impartiality of the agency regarding Iran and its nuclear program. And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
in the limelight.
The fact that the truce deal was reached on the terms of the Palestinian resistance and following marathon negotiations in which the resistance officials discussed issues from the position of strength proves that the truce deal is a triumph for both the Palestinian resistance and the axis of resistance. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, Palestinian resistance group Hamas has confirmed the four-day truce deal with the Zionist regime in the besieged Gaza Strip mediated by Qatar and Egypt, which is subject to extension. Under the deal, Hamas will release 50 Israeli prisoners of war held since October 7 in exchange for 150 Palestinian women and children who have been languishing in Israeli regime jails for years. The deal will also facilitate the entry of humanitarian, medical and fuel trucks to the besieged territory and halt the Israeli occupying regime's indiscriminate, murderous attacks on Palestinians in Gaza. The Zionist regime's drones hovering in the skies of Gaza will also stop for 4 days, as per the deal. In northern Gaza, they must stop for at least 6 hours a day. The Zionist regime will also not be arresting or attacking anyone in all areas of the Gaza Strip these days. The statement released by Hamas stressed that the terms of the truce are based on the vision of the resistance and its principles, adding that the talks were held from a position of steadfastness and strength in the field, despite the occupation's attempts to prolong and procrastinate the negotiations. While Hamas has declared its commitment to the deal, it has also warned that its hands remain on the trigger in the case the Tel Aviv regime breaches the deal or backtracks on its commitments. The Gaza-based resistance group said, "While we announced the arrival of a pause of fighting agreement, we affirm that our hands will remain on the trigger and our victorious brigades will remain on the lookout to defend our people and defeat the occupation and its aggression." It hastened to add, "Inspired by our responsibility towards our patient and determined Palestinian people and our tireless endeavor to support the steadfastness of our heroic people in the dignified Gaza Strip and to provide relief and treat their wounds, and in our work to consolidate the will of our victorious resistance on October 7th in the face of the Zionist enemy, the movement assured Palestinians that they will remain loyal to their blood, their sacrifices, their patience, their steadfastness, and their aspirations for liberation and freedom, their restoration of rights, and establishment of an independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital." There were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli regime prisons before the events of October 7th. In the last 7 weeks, 3,000 more Palestinians have been arrested in random raids across the occupied West Bank. The deal was finalized days after the policy of procrastination adopted by the Israeli regime, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was reportedly stalling attempts to clinch the temporary agreement. As expected, the right-wing Israeli regime minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who has been campaigning for war, couldn't hide his frustration after the deal was clinched, saying it sets a dangerous precedent. He wrote in a post on X, "Hamas wanted this time out more than anything. The outline is a dangerous precedent which changes the equation and may bring more events." The deal, according to experts, represents a major victory for the Palestinian resistance led by Hamas, which came 7 weeks after the unprecedented Al-Aqsa Storm operation. The operation which took the Zionist regime and its Western backers by complete surprise established the strategic and military superiority of resistance and debunked the invincibility myth of the regime. The fact that the deal was reached on the terms of the Palestinian resistance and following marathon negotiations in which the resistance officials discussed issues from the position of strength proves that the four-day truce deal is a triumph for both the Palestinian resistance and the axis of resistance. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement, in a statement posted on Telegram, made it clear that Israeli troops will not be freed until all our prisoners are liberated from enemy prisons. It shows that both Hamas and Islamic Jihad are not going to be blackmailed into submission, but will continue to pressure the Israeli regime into accepting the demands of the resistance. This time it is the Palestinian resistance that will speak, and the occupying regime will have to listen. Hours after the deal was reached, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, speaking at an event in Tehran, said the Israeli regime was knocked out by the Palestinian resistance. The leader of the Islamic Revolution told a gathering of Iranian Olympic athletes, "If I am going to offer you a breakdown of the recent developments, it goes as the Zionist regime was knocked out in Al-Aqsa Storm. Hamas, not as a government and country with ample facilities, but as a resistance group, managed to deal a knockout blow to the usurping Zionist with all those facilities." Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, on a visit to Lebanon, said the time is not on the side of the Israeli regime following 6 or 7 weeks of indomitable resistance by Palestinians. The resistance displayed by Gaza proved that America and the Israeli regime were the definitive losers, he stressed, adding that Palestinians will determine the future of Gaza and Palestine. He said, "We have heard from the resistance leaders in the region that their hands remain on the trigger until the full rights of Palestinians are achieved and the struggle against the occupation ends." Meanwhile, the truce deal announced recently has been welcomed by many countries. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Mao Ning said Beijing hopes the deal will help alleviate the plight of the humanitarian crisis, promote the de-escalation of conflicts and ease tensions. Russia described the deal as the first good news for a long time, batting for humanitarian pauses. Experts believe that the Israeli regime was forced to accept a truce deal amid growing public opinion against it across the world and the Palestinian resistance movement's fatal blows against the Zionist regime. Despite the internal opposition, Netanyahu had to concede to save his skin. But the events that have unfolded since October indicate that the occupying regime is already on the brink.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Brothers and sisters, as you were with us in the previous episodes, we reached this concept that there is one important thing in the supplications, which is the different objectives being followed throughout different supplications by the infallible imams. I mean, when we look at the different parts of the supplications, transmitted supplications specifically from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we find different objectives being followed. Okay, so we mentioned a couple of those objectives, and we said that there are some practical and ethical instructions found in these supplications, and this is not something deniable. And this is especially true in the case of Sahifatul Sajjadiyah. We were saying that we will look at some of the instructions of these infallible imams, specifically regarding Sahifatul Sajjadiyah. For example, one of the things which is sufficiently discussed is the ethical virtues and vices, and of course, at the same time, recognizing Satan and the ways to keep away from him. I mean, the ways Satan can be prevented from entering our world, our minds and thoughts and our deeds. We have been ordered to keep away from the Satan and to protect ourselves against him, to have any kind of control over our souls. This is something vital to us because disregarding any of the commands of these great ones, of these divine men of the Ahlul Bayt, may cause men to deteriorate. And this shows the importance of it.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. "Har khujo keshti." Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you.
About all the things that we went through. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of Dua.
So, one of the practical aspects of the supplications is that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has mentioned the dangers of the saint. He has said that he is a foe whose stronghold is our breast, whose movement is into our blood vessels, and whose weapon is our doubts. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says that through these sentences, Satan is thoroughly introduced so that man can defend himself against his bloody attacks. And somehow, these supplications enable all the human beings to nullify the aggression of Satan. Of course, this supplication belongs to an imam who is in the stronghold of Almighty Allah, of course, and Satan can never take hold of him. So, evidently, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has offered these commands for the people. So, one of these commands for the people is treating the others and observing the rights of the neighbors. For example, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam explains the ethical virtues and vices, and of course has different opinions about the government. And this is the different features of the supplications. We will have a look at these practical aspects found in the different parts of the supplications of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam in different parts of our episode. So the point is that what we can find is, in fact, that of course Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was infallible, but the things he has provided in the form of supplication is for us to take benefit, is for us to enter the world of intuition with the words and guidances of one infallible imam like Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, and make the most of these practical instructional issues Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has provided for us. So Imam Sajjad tells us to recognize Satan. Imam Sajjad teaches us the different methods to keep Satan away from us. Imam Sajjad tells us what rights we have for our children and what rights they also have for us. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam teaches us the different methods to respect our parents, and Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is using all these practical issues in the form of supplication. And this is only due to the situations of that time Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was living in. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The United States has been a steadfast supporter of the Israeli regime for decades, both diplomatically and militarily. Each year, the United States provides around $4 billion of military support to Israel. And since war broke out between the Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, the United States has sent an additional $14 billion in military aid to Israel. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Intercept has covered this story and tells us more. According to an American report, U.S. President Joe Biden has requested the removal of nearly every restriction on Israel's use of stockpiles of weaponry and ammunition stored by the United States in the occupied Palestinian lands. The American nonprofit news organization said on Saturday, 25th of November, that President Biden is seeking to remove all restrictions on the use of little-known U.S. weapons stockpiles in the occupied Palestinian territories that the Pentagon established for use in regional conflicts, to which the Israeli regime had been previously permitted to have access in limited circumstances. According to the report, the move was included in the White House's supplemental budget request sent to the U.S. Senate on 20th of October. The proposed budget says this request would allow the transfer of all categories of defense articles. The War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel was created in the 1980s to supply the United States with equipment in the case of a regional war in the Middle East, which is the largest node in a network of de facto U.S. foreign arms stockpiles. These warehouses are controlled by a set of strict requirements. Under the conditions outlined in these requirements, the Israeli regime has been able to tap into these stockpiles and purchase weaponry at low cost if effective subsidization of U.S. military aid is used. The report notes that with the War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel, President Biden seeks to remove nearly all meaningful restrictions on the stockpile and arms transfer in occupied Palestinian territories, with plans to lift restrictions on obsolete or surplus weapons, waive an annual spending cap on replenishing the stockpile, remove weapon-specific restrictions, and curtail congressional oversight over the matter. All the changes in the Biden budget plan would be permanent, except for lifting of the spending cap, which is limited to the 2024 fiscal year. The changes would come in an arms trade relationship that is already shrouded in secrecy. The House of Representatives has already passed legislation reflecting the White House's request recently, and it now stands before the U.S. Senate. Josh Paul, who was the Director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs for over 11 years, said, "By dropping the requirement that such articles be declared excess, it would also increase the existing strain on U.S. military readiness in order to provide more arms to Israel." Josh Paul, whose recent resignation due to U.S. military aid to Israel caused a stir in Washington, admitted that President Biden's emergency supplemental funding request would essentially create a free-flowing pipeline to provide any defense articles to the Israeli regime by the simple act of placing them in the War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel stockpile or other stockpiles intended for the Israeli regime. According to experts, the White House request would make it much harder for Congress or the public to monitor U.S. arms transfers to Israel. Under U.S. law, there must be 30 days prior notice to Congress before arms transfer, but the Biden administration budget request would allow this to be shortened in extraordinary circumstances. The English website of the Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A former senior U.S. State Department staffer has admitted that domestic policy concerns are leading U.S. officials willfully to ignore Israeli war crimes and to suppress the opposition to arming the Israeli regime. Josh Paul, who was the director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs for over 11 years, recently said that many officials are disturbed by the actions of the Israeli military, but they turn a blind eye to rules governing arms transfers to Israel. Josh Paul told Agence France-Presse, "In my opinion, Israel is committing war crimes in its actions in Gaza right now, and it's not just my opinion. I've actually heard from officials across government, including elected officials at a very senior level, who share that opinion but aren't willing to say it in public." Josh Paul, whose recent resignation caused a stir in Washington, admitted that criticism of Israel is often seen as a third rail in American politics, particularly in Congress, and this is a deterrent to U.S. officials to come out and say in public what they believe in private. He said the rules restricting arms transfer are weak, which leaves space for policymakers in a willful manner to simply not decide whether the Israeli regime's military has violated human rights in Gaza. The former official added that the United States keeps supplying weapons where it was clear, and as we have seen, that they are going to be used to kill so many Palestinian civilians. Josh Paul resigned on 18th of October due to a policy disagreement concerning the United States' continued lethal assistance to the Israeli regime. He said back then in a post that, "I cannot work in support of a set of major policy decisions, including rushing more arms to one side of the conflict, that I believe to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse." Josh Paul's interview came as the Biden administration has been unequivocally backing Israel since the regime waged a brutal war on Gaza Strip on 7th of October. The United States has been a steadfast supporter of the Israeli regime for decades, both diplomatically and militarily. Each year, the United States provides around $4 billion of military support to the Israeli regime, and since war broke out between Israel and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, the United States has actually sent an additional $14 billion in military aid to Israel. On Saturday, 25th of November, in a telephone call with Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant, the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin underscored the United States' unwavering support for Israel and received updates as a temporary ceasefire continues across the besieged Gaza Strip following nearly 7 weeks of warfare. A report published by Bloomberg News Agency recently stated that the Pentagon has secretly increased its military aid to Israel, including more sophisticated missiles and equipment, by delivering more laser-guided missiles to the Israeli regime's Apache gunship helicopter fleet, as well as bunker-busting munitions, 155mm shells, night vision equipment, and new army vehicles. The report by Bloomberg News Agency said, for example, as of late October, all 36,000 rounds of 30mm cannon ammunition, 1,800 of the requested M141 bunker-buster munitions, and at least 3,500 night-vision devices were delivered to Israel. Citing an internal Defense Department list, Bloomberg said the arms are already being shipped, or the Defense Department is working to make them available from stockpiles in the United States and Europe. The Pentagon has so far declined to comment on the report, but it said in a statement that it was leveraging several avenues, from internal stocks to U.S. industry channels, to ensure that the Israeli regime has the means to continue its attack on Gaza. The Pentagon statement said the assistance would be provided on a near-daily basis, and that the United States was rapidly supplying Israel with precision-guided munitions, small-diameter bombs, 155mm artillery shells, and other munitions in addition to Iron Dome interceptors and medical support equipment. In a recent letter, more than 30 relief organizations wrote to Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin to dissuade him from sending the Israeli regime the 155mm shells over the extent of their collateral damage. The organization said, in Gaza, one of the world's most densely populated places, 155mm artillery shells are inherently indiscriminate. These munitions are unguided and have a high error radius, as they often land 25 meters away from their intended target. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Ayatollah Khamenei says Palestinians' Al-Aqsa flood operation against the Israeli regime has disrupted the U.S. policies in the region. Mediators are engaged in intensive talks aimed at extending the humanitarian pause in Gaza, which is in its sixth day. And the Israeli military stormed the refugee camp in the city of Jenin amid escalating tensions across the occupied West Bank. Welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the historic Al-Aqsa flood operation by the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli regime disrupted U.S. policies in the region. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said that he hopes such operations will continue and help eliminate America's agenda in the region. The leader added,